We are live. Estamos en vivo. This is the Familia FFP podcast, and this is a very special edition because estamos en vivo. I'm Jorge Martin, your host, and today we're joined by RJ Ochoa. He is Raza. He is with Blogging the Boys. He's the manager and editor-in-chief. It's under the SB Nation umbrella. So he is one of our insiders, and he's going to give us all the cool stuff on Los Cowboys. RJ, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
Of course, Jorge. It's good to be here. As my dog agrees. It's been a hectic day, I was telling you. My wife had an issue with him, so he's hanging out with me. It's trash day, so he wants everybody to know not to mess with his territory. But it's really good. I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, that's awesome. It's so true. It's so funny seeing that kind of happen. I mean, my dog is actually 6 feet away from me, but he's zonked out. So thankfully, I'm hoping he stays that way. So for the rest of the time, so we could talk en paz. Estamos hablando en paz.
Yeah, I agree. I'm trying to ride him out here. But yeah, it's funny. Like he was super quiet, super chill for like 2 hours before this. You know what I mean? And like the moment we go live, it's like that's when he wants to talk.
And that's the thing. I didn't even know your dog was in there. And then all of a sudden, it's like, hey, you know what? It's all good. It's all good. They are doing their jobs. So I wanted to see. I'm obviously, you know, the Cowboys are such a hot button when it comes to the NFL. And that's why I really wanted to do this live. And I'm really pumped that you were able to join us on this. So much has been made of this team. Mike McCarthy going into year two and Dak Prescott going into the first year after that devastating ankle injury, which to me is right up there with what happened to Alex Smith and Joe Theismann, those things. I mean, it was just scary. I mean, how it cratered. This is a guy who was going to be pushing 6,000 yards if the pace continued. How can you just kind of tell us how that kind of cratered the season from that standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, people hear a lot and have heard a lot. This is Dak Prescott's sixth year with the Cowboys. And so people have heard a lot about he's a great leader on the team. And that's been something that's been difficult to quantify. Just because like that seems so like football cliche and quarterback cliche, but you know, everybody saw the game. Everybody knows like kind of how sinking it was when he got hurt, and the fact that it was this gruesome injury, and I think that adds a little bit more culture shock to it all. But you know, and I think it's interesting because he's at a point now, and certainly was last year, where you know time moves fast in the NFL, and he's now one of the more elder statesmen, you know, in the Cowboys locker room, besides the fact that he is this sort of natural leader. And, you know, it was a week after he got hurt. There was a report from NFL Network that, you know, players weren't jiving with the defensive coordinator, that there was all this finger pointing happening. And I mean, that comes out a week after, you know, Dak Prescott's gone. And like, that was the first time to me that I really could kind of quantify or put some sort of quantity towards what his leadership means. He does kind of keep everything in order. He's the senior on campus. He's the guy. I mean, every player I've ever spoken to talks about how, you know, like they say things that you would see in movies and TV shows, like he's the guy, they fall in line behind him. And so losing him, I think really just kind of in the NFL more so than any other sport, when a star player like that goes down, certainly a quarterback, it's such a death sentence on your season. It's such a like, well, you know, we're like, what I think about and what I thought about then is, you know, it was late October, and I thought, all right, we have to go through Halloween, we have to go through Thanksgiving, we have to go through Christmas, we have to go through New Year's and Valentine's, we have to go through the Masters and the Final Four and the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs and the Little League World Series. Like, we have to go through all that stuff just to get back here. And that's such a defeating thing. And I think that the Cowboys, you know, they didn't have, you know, maybe the discipline or whatever you want to call it to kind of combat that. And yeah, they almost made the playoffs because of how bad the division was. But Dak is that guy. He is that motivation for them. That when they do feel like, you know, all hope is lost. I mean, I know it all sounds cheesy and cliche, but he is that guy that can provide that. And so having him back, I think, is a lot of wind and a lot of different sails.
So, you know, you've got the situation where, you know, he came back from the devastating ankle injury. And I think it was just a huge part that he did not start the season on the PUP list, start training camp on the PUP list. But you just had an article published, I believe it was last evening, that talking about the fact that, you know, he's come down with a muscle strain and maybe he misses a little bit of training camp. Can you kind of update that? And I mean, is it too early to speculate on this possibly impacting his season, the season for him and the Cowboys?
You know, I think it's always, obviously you want to always be cautious with any kind of, you know, declarations or proclamations, but it does seem like all is well. Dak was scheduled yesterday on Wednesday to do his interviews with local television, all the DFW local television markets. He does those every year. And those went on as normal, which was a really good sign. I mean, if this had truly been bad, I think the Cowboys would have yanked the plug on that today, the day we're talking. It's actually his birthday. He turned 28 years old today, and he's scheduled to do local rounds with the local radio stations. And, you know, again, that's something that is, I'm optimistic. It does seem like it was a scare is maybe too aggressive of a term to put on it, but for lack of a better word, just kind of a momentary flutter that where things did not feel right. And, you know, Dak said something I've been thinking a lot about since the issue on Wednesday is, when he got paid and he had the press conference, then he talked about it more so like on your, you know, whatever third and six play, if you're going to reach for the first down marker or you're going to get out of bounds, he talked about how he realizes the organization has made this extreme financial commitment towards him and towards his body. And so he has to be more cognizant of that, how he can't be haphazard with it, because if he does go down, obviously that, you know, with him goes a lot of the Cowboys' hopes and promise. And so, I think that he just kind of maybe now is at a place where, given his inordinately larger responsibility because of the financial commitment the team made to him, I think he's just playing it safe. And you know, Mike McCarthy said he's also making the rounds on Thursday, his radio rounds, that Dak Prescott's still going to be part of practice and do kind of the running back handoffs and things like that, but they're just going to kind of mitigate his throwing. And so the fact that they're not shutting him down in any sense, whether it be for his public interviews or any involvement in practice, is good. I think people will panic that week from today, actually, when the Cowboys play in the Hall of Fame game, when he doesn't play, but he wouldn't have played that game anyway. Altogether, it does seem like a best case scenario that did really pick at some old scars and, hit those nerves, which is a little bit sensitive.
And you know, and the crazy thing is, it's crazy to think of him possibly, he's 28 years old, as you mentioned, he's been, before that injury, he's been a rock, started every game, kind of like the same, kind of out of the Russell Wilson mold. And obviously that injury was, you know, yeah, we've seen the play too many times, and it's just a freak play. When you're looking at him firing on all cylinders, I mean, we're talking from a fantasy standpoint, top five, possibly even top three quarterback. Just from the throwing, obviously, assuming that everything gets quieted down and there's no issues from this muscle strain, I mean, we're looking at another potentially 5,000 yard season. But do you think like he might scale back the running a little bit coming off of the ankle injury?
Yeah, I think so. I think that would be wise. And I think that, you know, I don't know that there are as many designed runs for him. I think everybody's kind of on board with that. I've been thinking a lot about this, and I don't have any shares of Dak Prescott in any fantasy leagues yet. I don't have him in any dynasty leagues, but I don't know that I believe he's going to be throwing for almost 5,000 yards, just because that wasn't a sustainable model for the Cowboys last season. They were losing games, and I don't think they want to play that kind of football. I think they do want to be more balanced, ideally with a great defense. And we know he's capable of it. And so, you know, I don't want to take away from that, but people talk so much about all the receivers and 1,000 yards for each of them. If that happens, I mean, it means this defense is really porous, and that is an awful combo. Like, people, I don't think people realize, because it sounds cool, right? Like, oh, all these receivers are going to get 1,000 yards. The right sequence of things have to happen for three receivers to get 1,000 yards. You have to be trailing a lot. You have to be in a lot of shootouts. You know, you have to be in situations where you have to be throwing, you know, over and over and over again. And like, injuries aside, that just wasn't viable for the Cowboys last year. And so I think that overall, like fundamentally, they want to get to somewhere different. I certainly think though he's a top five fantasy quarterback. I would rather have Dak at the range you have to draft him versus a Patrick Mahomes or an Aaron Rodgers. But I think, you know, looking at like his over-unders, I might lean under on some.
Okay. Well, you mentioned the, establishing the run, and you had a great article talking about how the Cowboys want to get back to, you know, that you know, grinding out the running game and that. Yeah, can you kind of sum up a little bit of that article, and then we'll get into Ezekiel Elliott and the running game and right after that.
So Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on his podcast, You Pod to Win the Game, mentioned a conversation he had with a Cowboys staffer after he visited camp last week. And in the conversation, Charles said that he was told that the Cowboys do, I think people here establish the run and they think of the, you know, the archaic model of it. And you know, people, Mike McCarthy is a coach that people love to mock and make fun of. And so it was really a low hanging fruit for that. People saying like, this guy, you know, he talks about analytics and he wants to establish the run. Like these are things on the opposite end of the spectrum. What I understood, my takeaway from it is I think the Cowboys, you know, they want to be balanced. And I think, you know, they want to be an offense that can put up points at will. They want to be an offense that operates off a short field, which wasn't the case with Dak Prescott last year. And they want to run the ball in the fourth quarter. And I think that's the right combination. We've seen like the Tennessee Titans kind of, you know, have success with that in the last couple of years. I think that's their idea. That's their ideal combination of sorts, because if Dak is throwing the ball 50 times a game, it could be Patrick Mahomes, it could be Aaron Rodgers, but that's just not a sustainable formula for you no matter what. I mean, you know, because the goal is to win games, obviously. And to salt them away in the fourth quarter. And I think that's what Mike McCarthy wants to get to, which the Cowboys defense didn't allow them to do last year. If the defense is truly improved, you don't have to be doing this, you know, go crazy, score 50 points a game. There was a lot of talk about like Team 40 Burger last year and all that stuff. 40 points is awesome, but you can win games with 30 points. You can win games with 27 points. And I think that ideally, that's what the Cowboys want to do. They've had such a great offense and everything else has been so subpar that they've had to be carried in that sense. And I think that ultimately the resources they've spent on defense this offseason and, you know, the inclusion of Tony Pollard in the run game more and more, I think that lends to a style of play that helps everybody. I mean, Dak Prescott is awesome, but you don't have to just rely on Dak Prescott. That's why football is football.
So let's talk about that balance that's coming. Ezekiel Elliott reported to camp 218 pounds, as I believe he said, as light as he's been since his freshman year at Ohio State. And of course, with it came the, hey, best shape of my life. that pronouncement that so many teams, so many players come up with. I want to say last year was kind of a lost season for him. He got COVID during the preseason. You never know how that really impacts somebody because he didn't talk about it. But so many people have talked about how it really impacted them for a long period of time. And he also had some nagging injuries, the calf that made him miss some time. He's 26, still in his prime for running backs. Are we looking at another workhorse season out of him?
So Zeke is such an interesting case study, and I think a lot of it is about perception. And I had a friend point out to me, you know, Zeke generally, when he has a full normalized offseason, he generally is incredible. Obviously, 2016 was his most incredible year so far, normal offseason. 2017, although will he be suspended, won't he be suspended? He's suspended. He's no longer suspended. I mean, song and dance that we went through before he actually was suspended. 2018, full normal offseason, leads the league in rushing again. 2019, holds out, goes to Cabo, misses training camp, the worst season of his career. Last season, to your point, gets COVID himself, and then everybody in the NFL is dealing with all of the, you know, social distancing protocols and things like that, far from a normal offseason. So this is one of the more normal years that Zeke has had, obviously, since 2018, you know, because of the holdout and last year's situation. And so I think that has worked well for him. The weight thing really means nothing to me. It's interesting, but I just, you know, like that just, it does, it. I think you're right. It does fit the, like, I'm in great shape, best shape of my life. That's, everybody's in the best shape of their life right now. And so I think that this is maybe, you know, when you look at like fantasy running back rankings, you know, if you asked your average NFL fan, like, who are the top five running backs in the NFL? I think they probably go Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Nick Chubb, Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry. I mean, like, I don't think Zeke, he's not a debate to be in the top five. Like, he's firmly outside of the top five. And, like, this might be the first time ever that that consensus might be there. And so I think that the expectation for Zeke is as low as it's ever been. His contract, obviously, you know, doesn't necessarily suggest that, given that he's paid so highly, which is the frustrating part for a lot of Cowboys fans. But so I think that he will outperform expectations, if that makes sense, because I think that they're so low. And I think that the Cowboys offense will sing and soar. But I don't think he will ever be the player we saw 5 years ago in 2016. But I think that for every year since then, people expected that. People expected to see this guy that was just going to be incredible the way he was as a rookie. And I think people have finally let go of that expectation, which is, I know I'm kind of riding the fence here. Because I think he'll just have an average year. I mean, he had the worst season of his career last year, and he had 979 yards, which I think a lot of running backs would take. There's a 17th game now, obviously. I think he's probably an 1,200-yard guy. He's never scored a billion touchdowns. He had six fumbles last year, and as long as he cuts that out, I think ultimately it'll be a productive season for him.
And that's the thing. I mean, I still feel like if you're getting – he's falling to the back half of the first round, which I think is kind of interesting, especially I think what happens – and you probably live this as much as anybody. When it comes to the Cowboys, everything seems to be magnified. It's, you know, their offensive line had injuries. Oh, all of a sudden, adios mio, everything's over. The sky is falling. You know, Zeke has a little bit of a down year. He's done. And it's crazy. And it's just, I think it's one of those things that he can definitely come back and still be productive because he's still 26. That's I think somebody may found that the prime for running backs is basically from the time they're rookies to about age 26. So, and obviously he's in the lineage of Emmitt Smith and Tony Dorsett, those great running backs that also wore that helmet. But I want to ask, and you pointed out a little bit, you mentioned Tony Pollard. There's a little bit of hype in the fantasy community about him possibly getting a little bit more consistent run to give Zeke a little bit of a blow, maybe, you know, kind of catch some passes, almost fill a little bit of that Kareem Hunt role that happened with the Browns. Is that something that's possible? I mean, could that happen?
So the issue with Tony Pollard has never been a lack of talent. He's insanely talented, and he had a chance to start. You mentioned Zeke's calf injury. Zeke missed time due to injury for the first time ever last season, and Tony Pollard had a chance to start against the San Francisco 49ers. And I think people look at that game, and he had like a 40-yard touchdown run at the end of it that kind of inflated everything. And that's just some necessary context that, you know, we were sure to remind people of. Although, love Tony Pollard. So the issue's never been talent. The issue has always been just timeshare in terms of the way the Cowboys organize it. And that's part of the way things have run is since 2016, it's been the Zeke show. And, you know, Cowboys coaches, and they've changed offensive coordinators, they've changed head coaches, have just kind of, you know, have dealt with that. I mean, it's an organization, you know, led thing that this is Ezekiel Elliott's backfield. I mean, I think in 2018, they only even carried one other running back on the roster besides, you know, Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, they are that concentrated in his efforts. And so, you know, when I think of Kareem Hunt and the way he's utilized, at least now in Cleveland, there is a legitimate, you know, devotion to him because he obviously has a lot of talent. And that's, you know, shout out to Kevin Stefanski and the Browns organization because they realize that. And I think that kind of mixes with the expectation for Zeke is, you know, he's touched the ball so many times over the last 5 years. And I think the Cowboys realize that. They want to preserve him. They realize that Tony Pollard is really great. They have these great options. And Tony Pollard's probably the best option outside of Zeke the Cowboys have had in the backfield since they drafted Zeke. So I think that they will be more concentrated in that effort. But I still, you know, I would personally still view Tony Pollard as a handcuff, as a potential, you know, wild card of sorts. Almost the way I viewed J.K. Dobbins last year. Like, I never really thought J.K. was going to get in the mix in Baltimore, and he did, and he was kind of special. You know, I don't think he was what people thought he was going to be, at least what I thought what he was going to be when I drafted him. But, you know, I think he's got that potential, but I don't think you could play him week in and week out, you know, even as the season goes on. His true value is obviously if Zeke goes down. But part of the issue is, you know, I think we've looked at, you know, running back situations like this in the past and said this offensive line is so great if starter X is out, I definitely want the backup. I can stream that guy for a week. The Cowboys offensive line is still good and still certainly passable, but it's not what it once was. And I think that there's a national consensus because people look at the Cowboys offensive line and they've been this great for so long. They've progressed a little. They're older. Their health is a question. They look really great right now at camp, which is encouraging, but you know, it's not an offensive line that I would say, well, they're that great. I'll play any running back that's back there in any given week. I'm excited about Tony Pollard, but I wouldn't draft him personally just because the Cowboys have shown no desire to play any running back that isn't Ezekiel Elliott.
So really, this offensive line getting back to I was going to ask you about this later, but you know, you touched on it a little bit here. When it comes to that line, it really does come down to health, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's an underrated part of last season and kind of the funk the Cowboys were in. Their right tackle, Lyle Collins, didn't play at all. Their left tackle, Tyron Smith, only played two games. And even, you know, the fact that they were gone, as big of a deal as that is, their primary options, but besides them, were two undrafted free agents. Brandon Knight, who was in his second year in the NFL last year, a UDFA, and Terrence Steele, who was a rookie last year, an undrafted free agent. And so, I mean, it wasn't, you know, just like they went from starters to reserve players. They went from starters to just, I mean, almost literally just bodies. And I say that with total respect for Brandon Knight and Terrence Steele and what they did last year. But that drop-off was immense. And I think a lot of great quarterbacks can make up for poor offensive line play. But, you know, Andy Dalton can't do that. And so everything collapses when that's bad. And so, you know, and I think another element, so the Cowboys were down their top two tackles. They were down their starting quarterback. They were down Blake Jarwin. I mean, they went into the 2020 season, you know, under the impression that he was going to be their top tight end. They paid him. They extended him last offseason. And Dalton Schultz did play admirably in his absence. But, I mean, they lost four offensive starters, you know, the two most important players in your quarterback and your left tackle. And so, I mean, that just really weakened everything and really made everything else difficult to overcome.
Let's get back to the skill guys. And I don't think there's a more exciting trio of receivers than what the Cowboys have. Obviously, Amari Cooper, you've got CeeDee Lamb, who is rising up the rankings in fantasy, and Michael Gallup, who's kind of that guy, you know, a lot of people look at him as that forgotten guy, but he's still going to get, you know, push for targets. Considering the fact that the Cowboys, as you mentioned, the Cowboys' best success is to have a more balanced attack, not try and throw for 5,000 plus yards. How do you see the targets shaking out, especially considering the fact that Amari Cooper's starting training camp on the PUP list?
Yeah, you know, the Amari situation is really interesting. You know, for any non-Cowboys fan, you know, this is a contract year for Michael Gallup, and if the Cowboys wanted to, they could get out of Amari Cooper's deal next offseason and only absorb $6 million against their salary cap. So there is a world or a timeline where in the offseason, after the Cowboys win the Super Bowl, obviously, where they say, you know what, Amari, thanks, but no thanks. You know, happy trails, move on. We're going to extend Michael Gallup. And so, like, I do think that there's a lot of, you know, evaluating happening, you know, to see which wide receiver of those two they want to pair with CeeDee Lamb in the future. I certainly believe that CeeDee Lamb would have outperformed Justin Jefferson last year, which I know is a bold claim if Dak Prescott had played the entire season. And I this is the year that CeeDee Lamb establishes himself as the alpha of this group. I mean, he's clearly the most talented. He still hasn't really even come into his own NFL body yet, which will only make him better. I mean, he's really incredible, and I think he's the most exciting player on the offense, certainly among the skill positions. And so that's the guy I want the most shares of, although I realize the price, you know, that you're going to have to pay in your standard league is going to be pretty high. I've been saying for a while, I think the best value if you're drafting them is probably Michael Gallup because he's the least popular household name among the three. But I actually do think the best value might be Amari in terms of just true value, because I think people think of top wide receivers and they're going to draft Tyreek Hill. They're going to draft Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. They're going to draft, you know, Justin Jefferson. They're going to draft AJ Brown and Julio. And I think that every average Amari is so slept on nationally. ESPN did their executive rankings last week, and where they polled, you know, different executives and coaches throughout the league for the top wide receivers in the NFL. There were 19 wide receivers listed in that whole, you know, assessment and whole analysis, and none of them were Amari Cooper. And so I think that most people, you know, when you get to that point, I think people are going to draft Odell and Jarvis Landry. And, you know, I think, you know, people are going to be really high on Devontae Smith. And like, I think that people just kind of sleep on Amari Cooper. So you'll have to pay more for Amari than you will Michael Gallup. But I do think that value's there. I'm not above saying that I think he might miss time due to injury. That's just kind of been his thing, which is a demerit against him and why the Cowboys might prefer Michael Gallup in the future. But when Amari is on, I mean, you're talking about a guy that in standard scoring is good for 20 to 25 points, again, depending on how your league is formatted. I mean, you know, the Cowboys, only one wide receiver in Dallas Cowboys history has multiple 200-yard receiving games, and it's Amari Cooper, who hasn't even been with the team for 3 full years. He hit that mark in, like, his, like, first 14 games with the team. So, I mean, he is – I don't want to say he's all or nothing – but I mean, he's very, very, very valuable. And I think that there's a lot to be coveted there. Michael Gallup will be the last one drafted, but there will be people like, I think a lot of fantasy people, because fantasy people are so smart and do all their research. And so I think fantasy people have kind of caught up or are hip to Michael Gallup, but a lot of people will choose different people. And I think people will even choose Michael Thomas over Amari at this point. They'll say, I know he's hurt, but, you know, he's a number one. You know, I don't want to deal with Amari and all this stuff. And so Amari might be the best value at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the rankings. CeeDee Lamb is one spot ahead in Fantasy Pros Extra Consensus rankings than Amari Cooper. So it's people are listening to you. I mean, that's
wild. I mean, it's truly wild to me, not to cut you off. And again, I believe in CeeDee. Like I certainly, you know, yesterday BetOnline released their over-unders for different, you know, things. And CeeDee Lamb's over-under for receiving yards was 1,100.5. That's basically over 1,100 yards and 6.5 for touchdowns. And I mean, in 17 games with a full season of Dak Prescott, like I certainly believe CeeDee smashes that. But I think Amari's still good for 1,000, you know, 1,100 yards. And I mean, if there is a wide, and we haven't seen this from CeeDee Lamb because he hasn't really, CeeDee has played 4 full games with Dak Prescott, and they were the first 4 games of his NFL career. And so, you know, it's hard to really know what he can be, but Amari has absolutely taken over different games. And so I still am inclined to trust that. If you can get multiple shares of the Cowboys offense, those are probably the two guys you want. But you're going to have to pay a lot for it, obviously. If I have some CD shares in some dynasty leagues, I don't know that I would spend, you know, that what the pick that it's going to take to get CD in a standard redraft league. Because the Cowboys situation is so not fluky, but there's so many options. I want Dak Prescott, but I'll let somebody else jump on CD in a standard league.
And doesn't, if I'm remembering correctly, doesn't CD have the number of honor among wide receivers for the Cowboys?
He does, which is, you know, it adds to the, I mean, he's really a walking legend at this point, and he's really fun. He's really easy to root for, and it just kind of fits. And so, you know, I'm really excited to see what he's going to do. If somebody was able to land him, although they probably paid a heavy price to get him in a dynasty league last year, I think he's going to pay off some massive dividends for people.
And I'll let you put a bug in his ear to change his Twitter handle to Ocho Ocho. So
yeah.
You mentioned Blake Jarwin. So this is going to be the last question on the skill side. Blake Jarwin coming back from the ACL surgery. I think you mentioned it's a big deal that he was not placed on the PUP list. Obviously, you still got Dalton Schultz there. And, you know, Jarwin has the contract to be paid for. Is he going to become I'm not going to say focal point, but just someone that's not going to have to say, hey, throw it to me here. Aquí estoy. He's going to be a part of this offense, do you think?
That's maybe the hardest thing to figure out. And, you know, like to start, I wouldn't want a Cowboys tight end, honestly, just because I think it will be frustrating because Dalton Schultz did play so well. Blake Jarwin is the guy they paid last year. And so I think that there's a level of devotion there. It's great for Blake that he did not start on the PUP list, but it's Dalton Schultz is a better blocker, and so that gives him more opportunities on the field. And so I think that's going to be such a game of cat and mouse. I think you're going to be chasing points every week. And I know that there aren't a lot of startable tight ends in the NFL in terms of fantasy, but I would just rather be somewhere else I would rather have Evan Ingram. I would, even with the Kyle Rudolph situation, like I would rather have something like that where I just, it gives me more peace to just have one guy that I can start, even if it's not a, you know, not everybody gets Travis Kelce or George Kittle, or Darren Waller, or maybe Jonnu Smith. But I just would not want to have to, you know, flip that coin every week, because I truly do believe tight end's such a like touchdown dependent position when it comes to fantasy. And so I certainly think that the Cowboys will get a lot of production out of Jarwin and Schultz. It's just, it's going to be a coin flip every week, every other week. Who's the guy? Who's the one? And I wouldn't want to touch that myself.
So do you see, I mean, we've talked about so many guys, and these are high profile, highly drafted players that we're talking about in fantasy. I mean, from the quarterback, running back and receiver side, any sleepers that people need to keep an eye on?
That's, you know, that's tough. People talk so much about how the Buccaneers are bringing back all of their starters from the Super Bowl, right? Like all 11 offensive and defensive starters. The Cowboys are returning all 11 intended offensive starters last year. Their right tackle didn't play at all, as mentioned, but so you can't really say that. But their starting offense, at least on paper last year, included Lyle Collins, included CeeDee Lamb. And so all 11 of those players are back. And so in that sense, it's tough to find any sleeper. And it's also, I mean, maybe Tony Pollard, but he's not a sleeper. Like everybody knows who Tony Pollard is. Like he might be the guy who most fits that description, which is a very loose one at this point. Maybe Cedric Wilson, who's the team's fourth wide receiver, had some moments last year, had a great game in Seattle before Dak Prescott got hurt. Actually threw Dak a touchdown in the game that Dak was hurt. So he's involved. And I mean, you've got your top three wide receivers. Then there's, you know, the next tier is just kind of Cedric by himself. And so he'll be involved. But now that the Cowboys have two tight ends that they really value, you know, last year, all the focus was about playing out of 11 personnel, 11 personnel. We want all three wide receivers on the field at the same time. Now they have two tight ends they trust. There's been a lot of discussion about playing more out of 12 personnel. And even that's such a hard thing to focus on because, okay, if you're going to play out of 12, you have to take one of these wide receivers off the field. And so I just think that that creates less opportunities for Cedric Wilson. But that's a guy that maybe, again, if you're trying to reach and scratch the bottom of the barrel, Cedric Wilson's probably the guy.
Let's go to the other side of the ball real quick. This was a defense that was very forgiving. I mean, I got to tell you, I targeted them a lot with players, both on my fantasy teams and also on daily fantasy DraftKings. Those so much emphasis was placed in the draft on adding to the defense, getting that side. How do you see that? Getting them back to at least maybe the middle so that the offense can maybe just play, hey, let's outscore them, kind of like the Chiefs?
Yeah, I think, you know, we generally see when teams are at like the, you know, one end of the spectrum of something in any measurement, any stat, any, you know, data point, whatever, there is generally some regression to the mean the following year, just because it's so difficult to live in extremes year in, year in, year out, whether they're positive or negative extremes. And so I think, you know, the Cowboys have unfortunately been at the negative end of the spectrum when it comes to creating turnovers as a defense. They're so bad at that. You know, I think it was the first four games last year, they had the Cowboys offense had two possessions where they started on the positive side of the 50-yard line. One was off of an interception that Chidobe Awuzie had in week one against the Rams. And the other was after the watermelon kick, onside kick that they had against the Atlanta Falcons. So, you know, and I think that that also, you know, like this goes to the offense, because the reason the Cowboys offensive players were so great is every drive is, you know, you've got to go 70 yards, 75 yards, 80 yards. And so like those yards have to be calculated somewhere. And so I think that that regression happens in a positive way. Again, I'm not saying they go from one end of the spectrum to the other, but I do think they get maybe not to the mean, but closer to the mean than they have been in years past. Some of that is just football. Some of that's just like tipped passes that end up as interceptions or, you know, weird fumbles and things like that. I do think that they will be more prone to generating turnovers. I think that in general, the floor of the defense will rise because, again, it will be difficult to be that bad. And so I think that affects everything. I don't know that I'm willing to say you still can't target them. Like I think it would be fair to target them in week one when Tampa plays them. Maybe week two when Justin Herbert plays them. You know, like they're those. And I would have no hesitation playing your average dudes against them, even when they play the Falcons. Like, you know, if you want to play, you're never not playing Calvin Ridley or anything like that, but I would not be fearful of them in any way. Will they be the worst defense in the NFL again? Probably not. I think they'll be much closer to average, but I don't think they'll prevent you from doing anything you want to. I think that they'll help translate things into more wins for the Cowboys, which is obviously their specific goal. But I do think that they will impact, and that goes back to the kind of the 5,000 yards, 3,000 yard receivers things. I do think that they will help mitigate some of the damage that the offense was having to overcome, which we'll look. I think that, after the first 3-4 weeks of the season, people will be saying, well, Dak's only averaging 275 yards a game. Like, what's going on? It could be a matter of, because he's got shorter fields to work with, because the defense is doing their job. So I think that, I think the defense is okay. Now, this is a long answer, but if you are feeling risky against them, you don't have any reason to kind of shudder at this moment. They do look great through camp. And so it'll be very fascinating to see how they work during the preseason.
No, that's awesome. Awesome. Well, that's it for the football side. I think one of the reasons why I'm really excited about having you on, it's always good to talk to a fellow Latino working in media, because I still feel like we don't have enough faces like ours out there. And you growing up in Texas, by the way, I want to shout out to my familia Martin in Arlington, tio Efren, tio Amparito, Irma, Efren, Güero, Jesse, Patty, Carmen. But who were your early inspirations to kind of want to get into media, and how great was it to not hear the no Mexicans are doing that?
So for me, and the trash is passing by, so that's why Bear is letting them know. Thursdays are always a fun day, so apologies. Thank you for
no, está bien.
I grew up in the Rio Grande Valley, and I still live in the Rio Grande Valley. For anyone that didn't know or doesn't know, it's the bottom tip of Texas. It's right near Mexico. In fact, the city I grew up and went to high school in, Brownsville, Texas, is literally the border town right next to Matamoros, Mexico. My dad actually works, and my whole life has worked in Mexico. He crosses every day. He works at a maquiladora, which, for anyone that doesn't know, is an American-based company that has a plant in Mexico. So he crosses every day to work. And so, growing up as a Mexican-American, kind of standard things and growing up in the culture that I did, I'm super grateful for it, and grateful for the things that my family taught me along the way. In terms of inspiration, I never really had a Mexican-American inspiration. I tell people this all the time, and not that this is, breaking news or anything like that, but like when I went to college, I went to Texas A&M University, and you'd be sitting at somebody's friend's house on the weekend or something, and movies would come on, and the movie Selena would come on, and people would kind of just like have fun with it, and talk about like the bumper and things like that. And I would tell people, like, you have no idea, like, what, because we would start talking about, and I would say, like, what her death really, like, how it just devastated our culture. And I remember my grandfather had, and this is just kind of an old person thing, I think, but when I was a kid, he had a framed photo of her in his house. Like, it wasn't like autographed or anything, but just a framed photo, just like out of pride. And it really, like, that's, I was 6 years old when she passed away, but I remember that vividly. I mean, I remember the level of devastation in my family, and the way my mom and my grandmother and my aunts and everything kind of were impacted. And so in a lot of ways, and growing up, a lot of people is I would ask questions about her. What meant a lot to hear was how she kind of pioneered this path for people. And so I never really thought about that, but Selena was a really huge inspiration for, I think, a lot of Mexican Americans. And my family is from the Corpus Christi area, which is where she's from too. So just that hit home a little bit harder than just from a cultural sense. And so I never really saw any analysts, any sports people, that were Mexican American, that were Latino or anything like that. I'm a big golf fan, so always was a huge fan of Lorena Ochoa. Obviously, just some of that's like her last name. We would joke with people and say that she was like our cousin and stuff. And that was really it. There weren't a lot of people to kind of look to in that sense. In terms of media people in general, I've always looked up, spitting this a fantasy discussion, I've always loved the way Matthew Berry has written. I loved how I've always felt like when Matthew Berry writes, it never feels like I'm reading something. It always feels like a story. And that's something I've tried to emulate and try to do in my own way. And you know, I'm a firm believer that time is our most precious gift in life. I mentioned my grandmother. Her favorite scripture was Ecclesiastes 3, a time for everything. And time is our absolute most precious thing that we have. It's you can't bottle it. You can't get it back. You know, time is so valuable. And the fact that people are willing to give us their time, whether it's by reading something or by listening or by watching, because they could spend that time doing anything else in the world, is really such a precious gift. And so I've always tried to make sure that whatever time they're giving us or giving you or giving me or whatever is worth it, because it is valuable.
And I got to tell you, I mean, I want kids to look at you. I want, you know, I mean, I've obviously had kids ask me about my background. I mean, obviously I've had the media background, and, you know, you mentioned Selena, I'm a little bit older than you. You know, one of the great inspirations in my growing up years was Fernando Valenzuela, the great Mexican pitcher for the Dodgers. I mean, growing up in LA, he is just deity still. I mean, he's still an announcer with the team. But yeah, it was one thing where, like, I took my dad and a couple of my theos to meet him. And it was like, these all were men in their 70s. And it was just like, they were all kids. And because he was so, he's so revered, and they even said, you know, gracias por levantarnos. And that to me is one of the, like, that when I look at, when I see what you're doing, nos estás levantando. So I want to, you know, keep doing what you're doing, and you know, just keep being a shining face for us. And one last fun question, because, you know, we're Latinos and we're Mexican, we're supposed to be connoisseurs of tacos. What are your favorites?
Yeah, it's my favorite thing that you've asked so far, and that's because I enjoy talking about everything. I did want to say one last thing.
Oh, sure.
Just because that's such a great point, you know, because there's such a strong, you know, semblance of culture in Los Angeles. And, I've been to one Dodgers game, and that was a really strong vibe I got when I went out there. But Abraham Anser, somebody, Mexican golfer on the PGA Tour, that I think is another, like, I'm really hopeful for younger people, just because, I mean, he's such a great golfer. He's from the Rio Grande Valley too. And I think that he has a chance to really kind of be this Lorena Ochoa, this whoever it may be, a really shining spot for today's youth, which is really exciting. So I mentioned I grew up in the Valley, still live in the Valley. It's tough to beat, you know, the Rio Grande Valley. Like I said, I lived in San Antonio forever, and people would say, you know, San Antonio has the best this, and it'd be like, you have no idea. Like, and that's because San Antonio's food is really great, but it's nothing like the Rio Grande Valley. I mean, if it's up to me, like, if it's, we're going, you know, it's a Friday night, you know, or it's a Saturday night, you know, it's 2 a.m. We've been studying all night, obviously. I want to go to the greasiest truck I know, greasiest place. In high school, there was a great place by our high school called Mr. Taco, you know, that we would go to. Just, I want a, you know, a styrofoam box filled with bistec tacos, dressed with onion, cebolla, and cilantro, and I want a Mexican Coke in a glass bottle. That's my, like, nirvana right there.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. You know, one that I'm kind of surprised that I don't get a lot is birria. That's another favorite. And oh God, you're making me hungry. I know that I've had some pretty interesting answers here and there. I've even had sesos a couple times, and which I ate a lot as a kid. Then I realized what it was, and I kind of shied away from that afterward. But oh man, RJ, thank you so much. Gracias, gracias. Fue un gran placer to have you on. Please, please feel free to share with our familia community where everybody can find your work.
Sure. It's a lot. I appreciate it. You know, my Twitter is kind of a hub for everything I do, just at RJ Ochoa. You know, blogontheboys.com obviously is our landing spot for everything. We're on Twitter as well at Blog on the Boys. We have a podcast ourselves. We have different shows on it. But, you know, we're available on all podcast platforms. You can just search for Blog on the Boys. Our YouTube channel, we put a lot of effort, you know, towards our YouTube channel this offseason. Really excited about what we're doing there this season. Again, just Blog on the Boys. That's kind of our staple name for everything. But we do a lot on YouTube, do a lot of podcasts. Obviously, we have a ton of articles that come out every day. It's really exciting now that football's here. It feels like time. I mentioned how valuable time, like it feels like it doesn't belong to me anymore. Like it's just like my life is so regimented, but it's a really exciting thing. And, you know, I love the Cowboys are something that we've talked a lot about family that I share with my family. And so I have the coolest job in the world. I'm so grateful. I'm so blessed. And so it's such a wonderful thing to enjoy the season, enjoy fantasy. My longest running league, this is our 12th year. And so it's great to have that family and that history and just, you know, and have the group messages and everything. And so I'm really excited about this coming season. I'm super thankful you had me on. Sorry about the dog, about Bear. He just, you know, he does that. He wants to be on the shows himself. He's really selfish is how he rolls. But we put up with him. I don't know why. But this was a lot of fun. And I'm hopeful that I was completely wrong and that the Cowboys do throw for 5,000 yards or Dak does. And have all this stuff because it will be I'm really this, you know, last season was such a downer for the Cowboys. And so it's really exciting to go into this season kind of full steam ahead and just enjoy it. I think that my last thought is, you know, something I tell people all the time, and this was even true last year, as bad as they were, you will never do your Christmas shopping with them out of it. Like that you will never be doing your Christmas shopping and like the, you know, the draft is all they have to look forward to. They will frustrate you. They will scare you. They will terrify you. They will lift you up. But when you're doing your Christmas shopping, when it's December 14th or whatever, or if you're doing it a little bit later, I guarantee you, you'll be checking your phone. You'll be getting alerts because they will be in the mix. They always make it interesting somehow, some way. And so I'm excited to see how they do it this year.
And they always pull off like some sort of win that just goes. Yeah. Like I still remember the game from that where they beat up on New Orleans. I think it was a Thursday night game, and it just like everybody exploded, and they were Super Bowl contenders the next day. It was phenomenal.
That's how they roll, man. I mean, it's a great great joy, and I'm really excited to see how they do it this year.
Yeah, and you get to ride the wave. And everybody, familia, otra vez, thank you for joining us live en vivo. This was phenomenal. I always love being able to highlight fellow Latinos doing this. You make sure you follow our Familia FFB Facebook page. Also, come to familiaffb.com. Make sure you're going to Anchor and YouTube to give us a, we're on all podcast networks. We're on YouTube. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. You can find me at Jorge Martin 17. You can find our Twitter and Instagram at Familia FFB for our show page. And again, everybody, thank you so much, Familia. Remember, todos somos familia. Salud.